Welcome to the Nexus!
Hello.
Numero E.
Riddle me this, riddle me that. Who's afraid of the big fat bat?
I think it depends on which bat we're talking about. Because some of them just, I like the guy in other movies, but Clooney just doesn't strike fear.
Clooney's Batman was fun, but the movie was terrible.
Yeah. Okay.
But Val Kilmer was a good Batman.
I thought Val Kilmer was a reasonably good Batman, but I don't believe, Stephen, that that's the Batman we're here to talk about today.
We're not. We're going to talk about the Batman from the 1940s. No, not that one. Our.
You got the Muttley laugh within 1 minute of us entering the Nexus. So that's so just so you know, everybody, all of you Nexites out there, the Muttley laugh is my natural laugh. So whenever Steve is doing it, he is doing his Muttley impression, but mine is a natural, that's the way I laugh. So just take that for what it is. It's just a fun fact about your hosts this evening.
And
So,
save the emails regarding that laugh, please. We've gotten several.
right, agreed, agreed. And we don't want to receive any more emails from Fancy Feast. We hear what you're saying, but until there is something a little bit more substantial, we will not cease and desist.
Agreed, because they know what they've done.
Yes, that's right. They absolutely know what they've done. So anyway, well, welcome. Welcome, my friend. Welcome to the Nexus.
Thank you.
What's going on?
And that concludes our episode. So let's jump into our main topic for today, which is we're gonna compare our feelings about about two movies, Batman, the 1989 film, and Superman from, I believe it's 1977.
Is that's when the original one was? That sounds about right,
With
but
Christopher Reeve.
I
So really
yeah.
we're contrasting the roles of Christopher Reeve and Gene Hackman versus Michael Keaton and Jack Nicholson.
Yes. And so as always, Steve has much more a much broader skill set at the organization of the production. So my question, I guess my opening question to you is, are we looking at this based on which movie we thought was better? Are we looking at this based on which actor portrayed the better? Or are we looking at our general feelings about Batman and or Superman or all of the above?
I think we're looking specifically at our thoughts on we're contrasting which is the better duo in the movie, Christopher Reeve and Gene Hackman, or Michael Keaton and Jack Nicholson. I think our feelings towards the movie and this character certainly play into this the discussion, but the main thing is to compare and contrast I guess those two what's the right word, duos. And so let me
Yeah.
correct myself, Superman did come out in 1978. And so for the context of our Nexites out there, in 1978, how old were we, Scott?
1978, we were, depending on what time of year it was, we were either 4 or 5 years old.
Correct. I'm going to assume. I wonder what's. Let's see. Trying to look for the exact release
I'm
date
just
on
looking
this.
here trying to fill dead air, folks. So Christopher Reeve, Gene Hackman versus Michael Keaton, Jack Nicholson. And how do those fellas compare to one another in their portrayal of the respective heroes and villains? What was the dynamic between them as heroes and villains? Did we feel like either hero really inspired in their efforts to save Gotham City or Metropolis and or the world? Did those villains strike any sort of fear, or was it mostly just, hey, this guy's humorous? Like, for example, when I think of a villain that is just somewhat humorous and enjoyable still provides, I think of Loki. Loki is an excellent villain, but he doesn't, I'm not afraid of Loki. Does that make
True.
sense?
Yes.
Yes. Whereas Darth Vader or Emperor Palpatine, not humorous, unless you're watching the Lego version, not humorous, and somewhat scary.
Yeah, Darth
Agreed?
Vader definitely in comics and
Yeah.
in some parts of movies, end of Rogue One, the beginning of A New Hope, definitely, and even in the end of Empire Strikes Back, definitely a fearful villain, or a villain to be feared. Really, his strongest performance was in that episode of, it was episode 4 of Obi-Wan or episode 3, where he walks through that village looking for Kenobi, and he's just force choking people
Yes. Yes.
all over the place. But
Yeah,
so let's.
that was a terrifying scene. That had I watched that, when like if Obi-Wan had come out, you know, in the New Hope era, in the original trilogy era, I would have been petrified. I would have been petrified by that scene. You know, we were near years old when that came out in reality, so it's not so bad, but yeah, that was terrifying. So good. Yeah, that's a good way to set it up. So did you find the exact date for us?
I didn't find the exact date, but let's go over a couple of things just so people
Okay.
have the correct background on this.
Okay.
Superman the movie introduces Superman as a character from his origin to where he leaves Krypton, all the way through growing up in Smallville, becoming the Man of Steel, and meeting Lois Lane, and ultimately foiling the plans of Lex Luthor. This is a movie directed by Richard Donner, who we can go into another episode and controversy on him being ousted for Superman 2. Interesting fact, do you know who wrote the screenplay for Superman the movie?
Jack Black.
Mario Puzo. And what else is he famous for, Scott?
Mario Puzo is famous for The Godfather.
Correct.
Wow,
Correct.
I did not know that. That
I
is.
don't. I maybe I knew that and I didn't. I forgot. But every time I see that, it you know, I'm surprised. We have a score because I think all of these things we're talking about do fall into line with you know how these characters come across in the movie. For example, this the score for this movie is done by John Williams, who is not a John Williams fan.
Well, and the other question is, I would want you to name 5 movies that John Williams didn't write the score for.
Yentl would be one. Funny Girl would be two.
Many movies that he didn't write the score for that are of consequence.
The Jeff Monheit story.
I'm
McCloskey
still waiting
and McCloskey.
Did that one just go straight to DVD?
They both of those did.
Okay.
All right, let's quick contrast this with Batman 1989, which is directed by Tim Burton, which Tim Burton has a very specific style of film that he does.
Uh-huh.
Both these movies are based on DC Comics, which is interesting. That's really the common thread that they share. And let's see. The music is by Danny Elfman, which is a name that you definitely would recognize.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think, was he in Oingo Boingo? Yes, he was. He was in Oingo
He was.
Boingo. And he did a lot of, he did the music. I know he did the music for the movie Summer School. And also throughout this movie, in the key scene, there's Bat Dance by Prince.
Yes.
Which is, and the two movies contrast in terms of, this is a very physically dark looking movie. Where it takes place either indoors or at night. And I would say Superman the movie is a lot of outdoor, a lot of daylight scenes in it. And so there's a contrast there too. Also, not to be, as we talk about this, these are two different time periods. So in 1978 is a much different time than 1989 was for film. So, but I do think for me, as big as both of these were huge successes, if I'm thinking back to myself, I feel like Superman was more of a phenomenon than Batman was. And we lived through both of those. The one of them we were in high school, the other one we were very small kids, so that could be influencing. The box office for Superman in 1978 was $300 million, and for Batman in 1989, box office was $411 million. So if we adjusted for that for inflation, I think Superman would have actually made more money.
Well, let's get our mathematicians and economists working on that to make that determination. But I would think it was probably about break even. Because you're talking about 11 years, you're not talking about 30 or 40 years. I would think that's probably about break even. Now, I will also say this. There is some difficulty here regarding box office for us because we were so young when Superman, the movie, came out. I do remember going to see Batman, if not on opening night, then one of its earlier nights, and waiting in a tremendously long line that literally wrapped around the theater to get in to see it, and them showing it on at least four screens, maybe
Yeah, that,
six.
and back in the days of Superman, it would have been maybe a twin theater at that time in the late 70s,
Yes.
would have been common, or a twin drive-in still at
Right.
that time, but not much more
Right.
than a twin. You're right, and
Right.
with
Yeah.
Batman, we're getting to the multiplexes.
Right. Yes, I
And
saw it
then.
at the I saw Batman at the Bijou Cinemas in Greenville, South Carolina, which no longer exists. They have been torn down, and it's very, very, very upsetting to me because I saw many, many movies there.
I saw Batman at the 309 AMC theaters in Montgomeryville, Pennsylvania, which again I saw many, many movies there. I know that I didn't see Superman the movie theater, but I did. I very vividly recall Superman 2 is one of my top three favorite movies ever, and I can tell you I saw that at the Baderwood Cinema in I'm not even sure what that's called over there in Abington, Pennsylvania. Which was
Yes.
a very small theater. It's also the first place I went to ever see a movie, which I believe was Peter Pan, and I was eating popcorn off the floor. Thanks, Mom.
Nice. Okay. And by the way, Elaine is listening, I'm sure, right now.
Elaine's a big supporter of the show.
Yes. So, hey, Elaine, I'm not going to hold the popcorn on the floor incident against you. I just want to go ahead and put that out there. Let you know there are no hard feelings. I feel like Steve turned out to be an upstanding young man in spite of that. So, kudos to you, Elaine. I want to say you just made a mention right now about Superman 2 being one of your top, I think you said top three favorite movies of all time. And
Yes.
that's an interesting thing to note because that implies that unless I'm wrong here, that Superman the movie or Superman 1, I'm going to call it Superman 1 through the remainder of the podcast, if that's all right,
I'm gonna veto that. No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
That Superman 1 is not in your top three favorite movies of all time. Is that correct? Is that a good assumption?
I would put Superman the movie in my top 10. So in no particular order, I think for me, my three favorite movies ever are Superman 2, The Empire Strikes Back, and Raiders of the Lost Ark. And you can, depending on how I'm feeling, I can justify why any one of those movies is my favorite movie ever.
Okay.
Everyone knows me, knows I'm a huge Star Wars fan. I think Empire is the best movie of all the Star Wars movies. I
We
have a
also
de
agree on that, and we've talked about that on this podcast before.
I have
We,
a
yeah.
degree in anthropology and studied archaeology in college because of Indiana Jones. And then Superman 2, I loved comic books as a kid. Superman 2 to me is like watching a comic book on the screen. It's just such an exciting movie, and there's nothing like the battle of Metropolis in the sky between Superman, Nahn, and Ursa, the three villains from Krypton that escaped the Phantom Zone. But I do want to talk about a couple things, like how times have changed. So, for example, Superman the movie, we wouldn't have seen that on VHS or Beta yet when we were younger. We would have watched that on, I believe it was on ABC, and they would show that over 2 nights, and it was starting a Sunday night. And then we get to the part where Lois Lane is hanging out of the helicopter in Superman the movie, or as you call it, Superman 1. And then it would stop there and it would pick up the next night. Because it's a fairly long movie. It's for sure, let's see, I can actually get the length here. It's
It is,
143 minutes long, which is pretty long. I don't think Batman is 126 minutes. So Superman the movie is actually 20 minutes longer. There's a lot in there, especially when you factor in commercials. So it's a pretty long movie. Also, I think for when we think about this discussion heading into it, I didn't know who Christopher Reeve was or Gene Hackman before this movie. Part of that is our age, right? But like when we think about Batman, we knew who Jack Nicholson was, and we certainly knew who Michael Keaton was. Because Michael Keaton, to me, when I think of Michael Keaton, I don't even think of Batman to this day. What can you name two movies I think of before I think of Batman with Michael Keaton?
Well, Beetlejuice.
That's not the one. I don't even like Beetlejuice.
Really?
I don't find that movie. I don't get it. I don't know what it is. I've tried to watch it. It's Tim Burton again. But Michael Keaton's extremely talented in that movie.
Uh-huh.
But keep going. Try another one.
Let's see. Michael Keaton. Okay, there's The Dream Team.
Oh, that's a good one. I didn't think of that. Yeah. There are so many great lines in that movie. Anything with Christopher Lloyd in it deserves a watch.
Yes.
And then a rewatch, and then five more after that.
And the scene, one of my favorite scenes is, what's the guy's, he's the dad on Raymond. Actor's name? Yeah, Peter Boyle, when he says they're going through the tunnel and Michael Keaton says something to the effect of, you know, if one of those tiles breaks off, then the whole East River is going to come down on us right now. Peter Boyle's, his thing is that he thinks he's Jesus.
Right.
He says, I will hold back the waters.
Yes. My other one was they go into a hospital because I think their doctor was in there. Because these, for those of you who don't know the Dream Team, they were like very low security, if any at all, like mental patients who are going to a field trip in a van with their doctor into New York City. Their doctor gets mugged and knocked out, unconscious, and they start exploring the city. So they go into the hospital, and Christopher Lloyd's got like OCD, and he's dressed in a really nice suit. And he's got a chart, and they're like, doctor, what do you see? He's like, didn't dot his I's, didn't cross his T's, no respect for margins. I'm like, focus. Oh, sorry. And I just always, that line always cracked me up. The Christopher Lloyd can pull off those kinds of lines that no one else can. But so I'm going to go ahead and tell you the two movies for me, Michael Keaton, come to mind are Mr. Mom.
Okay, yeah.
Which is worthy of a whole episode itself. And I also think Gung Ho. Is a movie that's worthy of an episode of his own.
Yeah, that was going to be the other one that I guessed. I don't know. The thing about Gung Ho is it's a serious message in the form of a comedy. Just, you know, the downsizing and what's going on in America at that point in time. Because Gung Ho was what year-ish?
I would guess 8. I would guess 84 if I had to guess.
Yeah, I would say somewhere in that neighborhood. So you know what movie I would think of?
86.
You know what? Okay, yeah, 86. So do you know what movie I would think of when I think of Michael Keaton besides, because obviously I said Beetlejuice, but do you know the other movie that I would think of? Because I have two movies that I would think of.
I think knowing your sense of humor and your personality, I think Johnny Dangerously would be one.
You absolutely are 100% correct.
And
yes.
The other one is probably Night Shift. With Henry Winkler and Shelley Long.
It's been a long time since I've seen. I think Night Shift I probably saw when it was out, and haven't seen it since.
That one did not. I would not suggest a rewatch of that one. For Stone's benefit, we're not even going to review the plot of that movie.
I think that's probably a good idea.
Doesn't age well. Anyway, so. Michael Keaton was mostly known before Batman for comedy that he did, which I always thought he was very like a very dry sense of humor, very smart aleck kind of thing in his movies. So it was kind of surprising at the time that he became Batman. And Jack Nicholson, already a very well-established actor, probably nominated for multiple Oscars at this point. Surprising that he would take on this kind of role. And one of the differences between Batman and Superman the movie would be that this Batman to me is an origin story about the Joker. Whereas Superman 1, so Superman the movie, is an origin story about Superman. I don't know how you feel about that. Am I accurately describing that for our listeners out there?
I would say that's reasonably accurate. I think there's a little bit of Batman's origin in there, because obviously you have the scene where the Joker kills Batman, Mr. and Mrs. Wayne. I can't remember what their first names were. Bruce's parents. And there's that whole, you know, did you ever dance with the devil by the pale moonlight scenario that comes back later and is part of the plot. Oh yes. By the way, there will be spoilers in our podcast today.
That'll be Martha Wayne and Thomas Wayne, Dr. Thomas.
Thomas, yes. I would not have gotten Martha, but I remember Thomas now that you say it. There's a little bit to the Batman origin, not a ton, not like
not
comes
ton.
Later with the Batman Begins kind of stories and those things. I think that, so I do remember though, in 1989, again, so any kind of chatter or I believe I saw Superman 1 in the theaters. I'm pretty sure I did. We were a movie going family. I think I've already, discussed
we were
that.
Too, for sure.
And I went to a lot of movies with my older brother. And so that was, it's just something that we did.
Did your dad, our parents are, your dad's still alive, relatively yes. The same age.
Yes. Yes.
Did he talk about, my dad would talk about things like, he could go to the movie theater for a nickel.
Oh yes, of course.
Mm-hmm. See two films, get a large popcorn, unlimited drinks, plus at least, a homestead of land out west, all for a nickel.
Right. Yes. And there was a mule involved.
And, right. And there was 3 cents of change.
and a bag of seed with which to go forth and plant. all of those things. Yes, he did do that.
I think throughout my dad's life, I always felt that, and my mom too, they always enjoyed specifically going to the movie theater, and they took us to many, many movies growing up. And I always appreciated, my dad always had a certain sense of excitement. When the movie came out and it sounded good, he'd want to go right away.
Right. Yeah.
And I know Superman 2 is one of those movies.
And I experienced some of that probably more with my mom than my dad. But yeah, I experienced a good bit of that. My mom, especially with the Star Wars movie, she was very supportive of making sure that I saw those movies. But anyway.
Our parents being born when they were in early 40s, late 30s, I'm not sure exactly how old your parents are, but my parents did not enjoy watching movies repeatedly like we do. How are your parents with that? My mom will say, you've seen this before. And I, that's 100 times is enough for Fletch.
At this stage of their life, I would say they probably wouldn't remember most of the movies that they've already seen. But I don't know, because... Once we went and saw, I don't think they cared if I went to see movies multiple times. They probably just weren't going to go back again. Because I can remember, especially like when we talk about Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, I can remember my mom we're going like the weekend that it comes out and we go and we watch it together and she loves it and all that good stuff. But then I can remember me repeatedly going back to see those movies again and again without her. After that initial attempt, or that initial viewing, I should say. So there was very much a generational thing that we would go and repeat movies. And, truthfully though, Steve, there's not many new movies that I watch again and again now. Does that make sense?
Besides Yentl?
But Yentl's not new.
Well, Yentl 2, the Briss is.
Oh, I didn't... Good. Okay.
I have to shout out right there to my good buddy Jim in Utah, who has helped with that joke over the years to cultivate it, to keep it alive. I think he's the originator of that joke. So shout out to you, Jim. Couldn't have done that without you.
That was extraordinary. Jim, we appreciate it. But I don't have a lot of I remember the hoopla surrounding the Batman movie.
A lot of merchandise. I worked at their time was with Taco Bell too, which I worked there shortly after this. Batman merchandise, posters, the black T-shirt with the oval Batman symbol on it,
right?
Which wasn't too far of a deviation. It was if you think back to the Adam West Batman, now the wings of the bat were more curved than angular, and Batman is now wearing. This is the Dark Knight Batman. We're not dealing with the blue Batman, the Batman that we knew from the cartoons in the late 70s or the Adam West. So this is the Dark Knight we're talking about.
Right. Yeah. So he's in black instead of, was that a grayish color?
Yeah. I guess. Cobalt. No, cobalt's blue. Anthracite.
Yeah, I'm just going to go with whatever you say here.
Okay.
So,
but Superman, this is very much the Superman that we would have seen in the cartoons.
Yes.
Very, very much the Superman we are all familiar with, and very much that Christopher Reeve is in fact like he's the only Superman I need. I don't need another one. Like he was so good as Superman.
Yeah.
That even when they did Superman Returns, they cast Brandon Routh, who looked like Christopher Reeve.
Right.
And Henry Cavill did a fine job. I just didn't. To me, it's not as fun. This Superman movie and even the Bat, they were fun superhero movies. And I feel like every superhero movies now are so heavy, and interconnected. And it's just a fun standalone movie as Superman is.
Right.
And then Batman goes on to further franchise. But let's start digging into the relationships there. So let's talk about the plots that connect our two duos we're talking about here. Superman is trying to. He's trying to stop Lex Luthor, who is buying a property in the border of Nevada and California, where his goal is to he's going to reprogram, I believe it's nuclear missiles. They're going to shoot into the San Andreas Fault, and thus causing California to slide off into the ocean, which the laws of physics and the actual fault lines, they're slip fault lines in California, which go side by side. They do not slide apart. So that actually physically could never happen. But do you remember there as Mr. A great thing in movies, especially in Bond movies and movies of this time, there's always that part where the villain just explains their entire plot.
Right, yes.
Do you remember as Luther is explaining this in his glass floor, there's a little piece of land there that says Otis Land?
Yes.
And he's like,
yes.
What's this? He's like, oh, Mr. Luthor, Otis was his, always was referred to as his bumbling sidekick, played by Ned Beatty, who was outstanding as Otis, by the way. And he's like, just a little piece. He's like, no. He's like, just a little tiny piece, Mr. Luthor, no. So Superman has to stop this. Luthor, what he does is he traps Superman by luring them into his subterranean subway headquarters. Put some kryptonite around Superman, and then Superman is all but drowning when he is saved by Miss Tessmacher, Lex Luthor's girlfriend. So that's just a quick summary there. While in Batman, we have Jack Napier, who was a gangster. He was fell into a vat of chemicals, transforming him to the Joker. He takes over and becomes the crime lord of Gotham City. We later learn that Jack Napier is also the person that killed Bruce Wayne's parents. And so in Batman, the movie, the Joker is taking something called Smilax, I believe, and putting it in cosmetics. And when people apply the cosmetics or deodorants, they end up with this permanent smile on their face and then dying. And so Michael Keaton is going up against him. Two very different villains here. You know, where you have Lex Luthor is almost more of like an intellectual, that type of villain. You have the Joker, who is a total psychopath, who was already a murderer, a killer, and taking great pleasure in seeing people die and in people's misery. But at the same time, enjoying wearing very flamboyant clothes and laughing. I think one of the interesting things here is that when we look at the character of Lex Luthor, I don't see a Lex Luthor that this that Gene Hackman's character is based on. But I see a lot of Cesar Romero, who was the original Joker from the TV show with Adam West in the 60s. I see a lot of that in Jack Nicholson's portrayal of the Joker. So what are your thoughts, Scott?
Okay, so I think about I'm gonna go in reverse order, I think, here. Lex Luthor, I never really, even now, and maybe today is the day that I am enlightened, I never really understood the Lex Luthor that Gene Hackman's character was based on. You know, to be fair, at that point in my life, most of my, because I was more always, when it came to comics, I was always more of a Marvel Comics guy. So I was, you know, Iron Man, Thor, Avengers, Spider-Man, those kinds of things. Then I was the Superman, Batman.
Ewoks.
Now there were some, Mad Balls.
I have that comic.
There were some.
Richie Rich.
Yeah. There were a few times when I would stray into the DC arena, but most of those were later in my preteen years than they were when I was in the mid to late 1970s. So my understanding, and I would assume this is yours as well, of Lex Luthor was Legion of Doom, Lex Luthor, the bald, guy who talked down to everybody. And Gene Hackman did do that. But I guess I always wanted to know why Gene Hackman wasn't bald in the movie.
Well,
Why
remember
did.
he wore a wig. But
Yeah, but they didn't. I didn't feel
I
like
don't
they
think
emphasized that
we
enough.
didn't see that really I think until Superman 2.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, he's very much like a, the Lex Luthor from the comics wore like I think it was like green pants and like a almost like a pinkish top
Yeah. Yeah.
with some kind of bandolier crisscross.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, it wasn't that Luthor, but I think the Luthor from the earlier Supermans was more of a businessman. There's even a novel that came out in 2005 by Tom DeHaven, where Luthor was actually was the city district attorney before he turned evil. But as our friends at Wikipedia tell us, that Lex Luthor was a scientific genius and a businessman who is Superman's nemesis. But you're right; it does look different from what we're seeing in the cartoons. Whereas Superman does look the same. Hey, look, and I didn't look this up, but I just saw it now. It literally on Wikipedia it does say Ned Beatty is Otis, Lex Luthor's bumbling henchman. Bumbling was always the word used for Luthor,
Yes. Yes.
for Otis.
So, I think that you're correct that when I think about Superman in the live action sense, of course, I'm going to go to Christopher Reeve. However, one thing that I will say, and I probably truly had a little bit of problem with Michael Keaton in this regard too, is that Superman. And please hear me, Nexites, when I say this. My DC affiliation with my personal DC affiliation is so heavily slanted toward the Super Friends that it is hard for me to break out of that. And Superman in the Super Friends, and when we did. Last time, the last episode, our random questions, and we were talking about HR issues that the Super Friends might have. And you said something to the effect of we were talking about Apache Chief complaining because he always gets sent out with like Samurai and Black Vulcan, and he never gets paired with Superman.
Right.
And I mean, Superman on the Super Friends was just the quintessential. I mean, he's the guy. He is buff, he is
Give it up,
intelligent,
Luthor.
he is he's going to handle all of the situations. I think about the one episode where Luthor had arranged for like all of the Super Friends to be destroyed because of some sort of solar eclipse mechanism that he used. You know what I'm talking about. We've talked
Yeah,
about
yeah.
this episode
That was
before.
the final episode of The Challenge of Super Friends.
And that Superman makes this recording about being the last super friend left because he's withstood and possibly be withstood before everybody succumbs. And Christopher Reeve was an excellent casting for the role of Superman.
Would you like to hear some of the
But
other people that were considered?
I would, but let me finish my thought first.
That's a
But
no then.
Christopher Reeve does not convey the brawn that I feel like should have been with
Oh,
Superman.
I think he does. He's Christopher Reeve's a pretty big guy. All right, here, let me throw these in. Okay, here are people that were turned it down. Robert Redford, Burt Reynolds. So Stallone was interested and met with Donner. Paul Newman was offered his choice of roles as Superman, Lex Luthor, or Jor-El for $4 million, but turned him down. Olympic champion Bruce Jenner auditioned for the role. This is the one that really surprises me. Both Neil Diamond and Arnold Schwarzenegger lobbied hard for the role, but were ignored. James Caan, James Brolin, Lyle Wagner from Wonder Woman, Christopher Walken, Nick Nolte, John Voight, and Perry King were approached. Perry King from Riptide fame. Nolte wanted to play Superman as a schizophrenic.
Nolte's a schizophrenic.
It says that Kris Kristofferson, Charles Bronson were also considered for the role, and Warren Beatty was offered the role but turned it down. I don't see anyone in that list that I would want instead of Christopher Reeve, would you?
Okay, so the only one in that list that I feel like is even a reasonable consideration, I can see Warren Beatty playing that role. I can.
Really?
See that. Yeah, I can. But however, for the sheer comedy of it, I would love to see what Burt Reynolds did.
I would like to see what Neil Diamond would have done.
Well, that's true. That's another good one.
Sweet Lois Lane.
You know, I keep wondering, how is it that Burt Reynolds made so many bad career choices? Because, you know, he was the original choice for Han Solo.
Was he really?
Yes. Yes.
Wow. Well, that's kind of like we talked about with, like, you know, who was Cyndi Lauper's boyfriend we talked about to tell her to turn down We Are the World?
Yeah.
In 1980, a Lionel Richie and Michael Jackson production. One of the worst pieces of advice ever given. Thank God she didn't.
Yes. Yes. Oh, and by the way, I did watch that. And oh. I thought it was extraordinary. That was a fantastic documentary.
Excellent. We'll get back to that after this. We're on 36 minutes already.
Yes. And we have random questions coming, right? Is that today?
We do. I don't have a ton. I just have a few.
Okay. All right. So yeah, I would say, okay, Nicholson. So I talked about the buzz around movies, and I don't remember any buzz around Superman because we were so young then. So I don't remember
that's true.
What people would have talked about. But around, I remember people being ecstatic over Nicholson taking the role.
And I remember people going, Michael Keaton is Batman?
Yes, absolutely. What? Absolutely. And I do believe I recall somewhere, Stephen, that the reason that they cast Keaton in that role was because of the way his eyes looked in the mask.
He did look good in that mask. I'll definitely.
He did.
And it's nothing to be taken away for anyone who has to act behind a mask. It's harder, not easier.
Right.
Because you'd lose that part of expression on your face.
And so in 1989, going to that movie and seeing it and walking out of the theater, I can remember thinking Jack Nicholson did exactly what I expected Jack Nicholson to do and talking about that. Michael Keaton, I can remember saying, nah, he was fine. It was okay. Now that I have, let's see, 11 plus 24, 35 years later, my feelings are reversed. I feel like Michael Keaton
meaning
was...
Meaning bad is good and good is bad?
Meaning that Michael Keaton was phenomenal in that role. And Jack Nicholson was fine.
I would agree with that. I think Keaton's the more impressive performance.
Now, I'm not necessarily saying that I feel like this Heath Ledger, Joaquin Phoenix, psychopathic horror movie Joker is a better rendition. I'm not saying that. I don't know that I necessarily feel that way. But if I'm going back and I'm comparing Cesar Romero and Jack Nicholson, I'll take Cesar Romero.
Yeah, I'm with you on that too. I also thought it was one of those endearing things about the original Batman TV show that he didn't want to shave his mustache.
Uh huh.
So they just put the white makeup over it.
Uh huh.
And I just that little thing is always so interesting to me. But if you compare the two Jokers, and I feel like Nicholson takes a lot from that. I don't know. This Joker was a little bit too psychotic for me at times. You know, when he kills Jack Palance, when he goes to shake his hand and just basically melts him or electrocutes him to death. Very, very strange stuff. Or when he that whole thing with was like deforming Jerry Hall, like her face. Was the Joker's girlfriend. I don't remember what her name was. Just for his pleasure. Was very weird.
Right.
I don't think we get a ton of screen time with Nicholson and Keaton. I remember he says something like, "You ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight?" And he says that like when he kills Bruce's parents. Then he says again later, and Keaton's like, "What? What did you say?"
Yeah,
and he's just starting to make connections now that makes this thing personal.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. I agree. I think that. And then you know, and here's so, I'm because of Superman 2. When we compare Batman versus Superman, this Batman versus Superman 1, I'm probably going to go more with Batman as far as which one I prefer. They just had, there were just so many more advances in the special effects. Michael Keaton was a nice surprise. I have the, you know, the distortion of the super friends, Lex Luthor against the role that Gene Hackman played. And I love Gene Hackman. Don't get me wrong. But Superman 2, I agree with you. I don't know that I'd put it in my top three, but I would put it in my top 10 movies of all time.
And he's just as good. He's so backstabbing and conniving in Superman 2.
Oh yeah. Yeah, he's great in that movie. Yeah, he really is. But Superman 2 is one of those rare occasions where, much like Empire Strikes Back, where the second movie is better than the first one.
I do agree with that. And I think specifically the Donner cut, if you've seen that, of Superman 2, where
yes, you know,
the Donner cut matches so much better to this movie than the theatrical version. It's also the strange thing where like both versions actually work. The theatrical version is fine, and the director's cut is really good, even though they're two very different things.
Right, right. Yeah, so I would, you know, I think that I was okay with the shift to Batman of this Batman almost by degrees, because, you know, this is the Frank Miller Dark Knight era. That we are entering into in the late 80s. And I'm okay, but I didn't like Frank Miller's shift because it was just so drastic. I felt like Michael Keaton's Batman and Val Kilmer's and Clooney's, for that matter, I felt like they were just incremental enough where I could be okay with Batman having more of an edge to him rather than being the geek scientist in the laboratory with the, you know, the bat shark repellent, you know?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
I love saying the line, "Quick, Robin, the anti-bat shark repellent."
Yes, yes. They give a nod to that in the Lego Batman movie.
And I think there is a difference between, like I said, like fun superhero movies, which Superman is and Batman 1989 is. And then we get into Batman Forever and Batman and Robin, which is the Kilmer and Clooney ones. Those are just silly.
Yeah.
Like, and silly not in a good way.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas I think both of Keaton's movies, both of Keaton's Batman movies are pretty good. I didn't love Batman Returns, though, but Batman's still, it's really good. I think the Joker is really, really over the top. But I think the color contrast is really cool between him and the rest of Gotham, which is just so dreary.
Right.
Except for the end there, though. I didn't feel like the end. There's a scene in the museum where they kind of have a confrontation. I thought the dialogue between Luthor and Superman, Christopher Reeve Superman, was sharper and more direct. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I felt more tension there between the two of them. And it seemed like Luthor was taking great pleasure to destroy Superman, whereas Jack Nicholson just says, "I'll kill whoever." Because I think he has that one henchman with the long hair and the beard. I think at one point he just turns the gun and shoots him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because he just didn't care because he was crazy.
Yeah. The other thing that I do want to address is, because now I know we're approaching the 45-minute mark, so we probably better move on to other things, but is Margot Kidder is, I think, the quintessential superhero lady friend of any film now, then, ever. I love her Lois Lane. I think it speaks to it. She is somewhat of, you know, 1970s, you know, we're living in that historical period as a feminist movement kind of deal. So she speaks kind of to that, and she's a strong character, but she still has enough. I feel like she still pays enough homage to the comic book Lois Lane, and who she was, and just that go-getter. I'm going to go after the story. I'm going to put myself in all kind of danger. And I think of course, you know, granted, you brought up the helicopter scene as far as that was the cut for the when ABC would show the movie on two different nights. I also think of the elevator scene in the Eiffel Tower, the opening of Superman 2. That ends up blowing up the elevator going into outer space ends up being the thing that blows up the prison that Zod and
the Phantom Zone
have been imprisoned in. Vicki Vale, or for that matter, any of the women, even Michelle Pfeiffer as Catwoman, who she did a great job, don't get me wrong. They just don't hold up to Lois Lane.
No, and part of the Lois Lane thing is it was her over the top chemistry with Christopher Reeve.
Yes.
Which they were just so on the same wavelength.
Absolutely.
It was just unbelievable. They seemed like they were meant to be together. They mixed so well. And that's what I thought Lex Luthor mixed in well with them. Everything in Superman just seemed to come together for me a little bit. It seemed more cohesive, and it makes sense because Superman and Superman 2 were essentially filmed at the same time. I think 75% of both movies were done when they fired Donner.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had to go back and reshoot most of Superman 2. So it makes sense that there's that great continuity there across those two movies. Superman 3 completely falls apart because they just focus on like, hey, let's get Richard Pryor. He's great, which he is, but he's not great in Superman 3. And then take some weird turns. And then by the time we get to Superman 4, Lex Luthor is back, but now he's got like his nephew, John Cryer, and he's creating like Solar Man, and the special effects budget was $2 maybe for that film. But then it just kind of fell apart from there. It would have been interesting to see if, you know, in case anyone doesn't know, Christopher Reeve died at a young age because he was in a horse riding accident, broke his neck, and he was in a wheelchair for most of his life. Do you know, I always forget this. Do you remember who Christopher Reeve's best friend was?
I don't.
It's a name you know. It's no one obscure.
Okay. Bruce Springsteen.
Robin Williams.
You know, I was reading in preparation for this. Did you know that when they offered Nicholson the job for the Joker, that he waffled for a little bit? And so they offered it to Robin Williams, who accepted. But then Nicholson came back and said that they wanted to do it, so they had to take it away from Robin Williams.
That's interesting. That's interesting how different that could have been.
Yes.
I think it wouldn't have been quite as dark. With Robin Williams. I always thought Robin Williams too. I have very strong feelings on him because I feel for me personally, he's much better as a serious actor.
Yes.
Than he is a comedian.
Yes. Agreed. 100%. I agree.
Look, go see Awakenings.
Yeah.
You know, his comedy's not for me. Yeah, we talked to Mark and Mindy about that, I think, maybe in one of the episodes. But he's a tremendous actor who I think so much was overlooked with his over-the-top antics that, like, there's a really good actor in there.
Patch Adams, my favorite, I think, Robin Williams film. Let's see, I've got two. My favorite would be Dead Poets Society. Is one of my favorite Robin Williams films of all time. But another one that's really good, and I don't know if you would call it that he was the star, but I love Good Will Hunting.
How about The World According to Garp? Wasn't
it? Yes, he was in that, and I saw that when it was like new, which I probably shouldn't have.
That's one of those movies where like I saw it a ton of times on cable, and it came out in 82, so probably watching 83 at age 10, probably a movie I should not have been watching.
Yeah, I read the book also. It was a book by John Irving, who also wrote, do you remember a movie called Simon Birch? About a kid who was like really super small. And the book was called actually A Prayer for Owen Meany. But John Irving's like a pretty serious novelist. That's what I got for to contribute to Batman versus Superman. Today.
Admittedly, not a terribly deep dive, but a very good, I think a good overview of those two movies and contrasting them.
Yeah.
So let's go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, and I think we could, you know, go into those more. I'd love to have a broader framework just of maybe the franchises versus one another, and on a day where we are just simply talking about that and nothing else, you know, maybe even foregoing the Mike Schmidt trivia question for the day to just talk to compare and contrast the evolution of those two. And there, I'll be quite frank, there are several renditions that I have not seen of on either of those franchises. So, yeah, I would need to do some research to catch up on those sorts of things. But anyway, so.
All right, so let's go into some random questions here.
Okay. Do we have any theme music for random questions with Scott yet? Is that?
Oh, I do have one correction. So Florida from Good Times was Maude's maid, not Edith's maid on the family. I think I was saying that last time. So just go back and correct that. And we definitely need to do an episode in the Jeffersons.
Because
they just flat out deserve it. So who's your favorite explorer?
Like of the New World?
Yeah, like we're talking about Magellan, DeSoto, Coronado.
Okay, yeah. I'm going to have to go with, I mean, it's got to be a conquistador just because, you know, that just seems like an epic adventure. And so I'm going to go with Hernando Cortez burning the ships as soon as his men got off so they couldn't try to flee back to Spain, you know.
What are your thoughts on Amerigo Vespucci?
I think he's a fraud. But I'm also quite partial to Prince Henry the Navigator.
Well, that's a good one, yeah.
Yeah. So, and how about you? How would you answer that question? Who's your favorite?
Oh, I always went with Magellan because, you know, the word circumnavigate is awfully fun.
Yeah, it is a fun word.
Even though he likely just, you know, probably went to the Philippines. I think that's where he died. Do we consider Marco Polo an explorer?
Yeah, without question.
Okay.
Also the founder of one of the greatest pool games ever.
That's true.
You know, I might change that original answer of Cortez to Francisco Pizarro, just because that's also fun to say. And when I'll be honest with you. So when we learned about him, that's when I was watching the Super Friends. So who did I immediately think of? Bizarro.
Oh,
Pizarro, gotcha. Bizarro. So whenever I picture Francisco Pizarro, I picture Bizarro from the Super Friends and him into the jungles the jungles near the Andes Mountains and saying, "You gonna go over here. We conquer this land for Spain." Yeah, that's what I do. I mean,
can you say that as Solomon Grundy as well?
Solomon Grundy claimed land for Spain.
Yeah, I just assume he was with Francisco Bizarro.
We should have an episode where we take famous lines from history and say them as villains from the Super Friends.
Yes. Except Toy Man. I don't want to do Toy Man. That's just annoying.
Toy Man's worthless. He's essentially the Joker.
Yes, right.
All right, so on the lines of exploration, are you a Tropic of Cancer or Tropic of Capricorn guy?
I mean,
solely based on the lines of latitude.
I mean, you've got to be a Tropic of Capricorn guy just because who wants to be Cancer?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's got to be Capricorn.
And which hemisphere is that, Scott?
That's the southern hemisphere, I believe.
Correct. That is correct. You've redeemed yourself.
goodness. Yeah. Thanks for that. That was a little bit of humility goes a long way, folks.
Like I said, I don't have a ton of these, but rank. Can you rank back when we were younger? Really, up until maybe 87, there were still only, you know, we had our UHF channels. Which had local programming, and then we had the major networks of ABC, NBC, and CBS. How would you rank those in order? One being your favorite, three being the least. And let me know some of your favorite shows from those networks. Or give me the one show. So rank them, then I'm going to ask you a question to follow that up.
I'm going to go ABC, CBS, NBC.
Interesting. Okay. I would go ABC, NBC, CBS. Now, I'm going to give you the network. Tell me the first show that comes to your mind. I'll share with you mine, too, because I already thought of mine. ABC.
Wide World of Sports.
Happy Days. NBC.
Cosby Show.
A-Team. CBS.
That was nice. Nice. That was nicely done. I mean, I'm going to have to go later in life now. That's going to be CSI Miami.
Now, come on. No, you can't do that. You got to go back to the 70s and 80s.
I don't know. So I don't know what network shows came on like you do.
That's I think not, if you pay better to – you know what? Your homework is to watch several episodes of Battle of the Network Stars. Study who's on what network and what shows, and then come back to me.
I really should. So what was Welcome Back, Kotter on?
ABC.
Okay, that was my ABC answer.
I got to check that because I'm pretty sure it was.
So what is yours for CBS?
CBS, the first one that comes to mind is Dallas.
I was going to say Dukes of Hazzard, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah,
and I know those were on the same network.
Welcome Back, Kotter. Surprisingly, had 95 episodes. I thought that would have been a show that was on for two seasons. It was on for four. It wasn't ABC. I would go CBS. When I think of that, I think of Dukes of Hazzard, and I think of Dallas. ABC to me, just like Tuesday nights, Happy Days, Laverne and Shirley, always will just like immediately come to mind. NBC is a ton of fun stuff out there though. A-Team and then Knight Rider. I'm not sure what the Rockford Files was on.
Okay. So there were two helicopter shows that came on at the same time. There was Airwolf and there was Blue Thunder.
Right.
Which networks were they on?
Airwolf would have been CBS and Blue Thunder NBC would be my guess.
Okay. Okay.
Do you know if that's right?
I don't know. I have no idea. I really don't. Do you remember a show? So I'm going to hit you with something that I want to see if you remember.
Blue Thunder was ABC.
Okay. Do you remember a show called Bring 'Em Back Alive?
Bring 'Em Back Alive.
It came on not long after the original Raiders of the Lost Ark. And the guy was it was very obvious that he was based on an Indiana Jones type character. His name was Frank Buck. That was the character's name.
Yeah, Bruce Boxleitner, who would be famous for Scarecrow and Mrs. King.
Yes.
Okay, and this is, number of episodes 17, based on a book called Bring 'Em Back Alive. And let's see. Yeah, you're right. It was produced based on the success of Raiders of the Lost Ark. It was on from 82 to 83. Mm-hmm. It was scheduled against NBC's Top Hit the A-Team and ABC's Top 30 Hits, Happy Days and Laverne and Shirley, which is exactly why I'm not watching that, because I would be watching my favorite shows in the other networks. Interesting. I'll have to find this.
So another show that I want to know if you saw, and I think it only had four episodes. It was called Wizards and Warriors. Do you remember this?
No.
It may have had episodes, but it came on, and I was wholly and totally immersed in it because it was the only show that had some sort sort of a fantasy-like it was on in 1983 and it had, let's see. It had eight episodes.
What was this called again?
Wizards and Warriors.
Wizards and Warriors. All right. I have one for you.
Okay.
I probably saw all 17 episodes of this show. Do you remember a show called Lottery? Here's the quick premise. A lottery representative and his IRS partner meet various winners across the country to present prizes and change their lives. And it would talk about how the people's lives changed because they won the lottery. Here we go. Very nice font here. It's like got a very like digital computery looking font for the title sequence, and the exclamation point has the S in the middle for like a dollar sign. Mm-hmm. I do remember that was on like 83, 84. The other one is I remember a show something about the FBI.
Is it called FBI? Because that's still running.
there was an FBI TV series that was on, but when I looked this up, it says it was on like from 65 to 74. Okay, here we go. Today is FBI. That was it. That was a show. It was called Today's FBI, and it was on the number of episodes 18. It was on in the mid 80s, 81 to 82. Mike Connors was in it.
Okay. I don't remember that one. So I feel like that one day we need to do an episode. This would be so half of it we talk about Taxi, and half of it we talk about Emergency.
Ooh. I remember some of the first
because those two
had.
Things don't go together at all.
No, and that's the brilliance of it. Yes. But I remember Emergency. I always thought Emergency was called Emergency One for some reason. I always called it that as a kid. I don't know why I added the one into it. But I remember having the fire hats as a kid. Mm-hmm. I even had like a mask that
and
attached
an oxygen
to like a
tank.
Plastic
yeah.
oxygen.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Yeah.
God, I loved that. That was so much fun.
I'm starting to worry about your short-term memory because we've talked about this on the episodes too. Your long-term memory is extraordinary. Yeah.
Well, I don't go back and listen to the episodes we do like you do.
They provide excellent content source for our episodes. So, all right. So, have you asked all your random questions?
I was going to ask who your favorite G.I. Joe villain was. Out of the Destro, Baroness, Dr. Mindbender, Cobra Commander, Zartan, Serpentor, Major Blood, or the Twins? Tomac and Zamar.
So it's going to be a tie. And I was actually considering this just the other day without foreknowledge of your question. It's going to be a tie between Destro and Major Blood.
Really? Why Major Blood? I always felt like Major Blood did very little.
I love his over-the-top accent.
His accent is quality.
It's sort of a redneck British.
It is. How does that? It is. It's very Cockney.
Yeah.
What is that thing he's wearing on his head?
Some sort of helmet. I
yeah,
don't
it's,
know.
It's a, I was thinking about that. I was like, what exactly is that helmet he's wearing?
Yeah, it's very strange.
Did you say Zartan or did you say
no?
Destro?
I said Destro. Destro.
I loved
it.
Destro is. Destro, I think I told you this line in just conversation when we were talking, but Destro had a line where he said to Lady J, "Lady J, watch that sharp tongue of yours, or it may end up cutting your throat." Which for a children's TV show, man, that's some dark stuff.
So, just about that, my kids, I introduced them to G.I. Joe, and so we've watched the. Crazily, I didn't realize that the first episode was basically a five-parter. That was the introduction that they had. But okay, I did not recall the awkward relationship between Flint and Lady J. I mean, I did not remember that there was romance that early on in the show.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I didn't realize that the Baroness and Destro were openly kissing.
Yes. Like when they were on a mission.
Yeah. That's no wonder Cobra Commander was getting so upset.
Yeah, no doubt. I can see why he would be constantly worked up. Because he's almost always in a frenzy.
Yeah, his blood pressure is through the roof.
Oh, there's no doubt. There's no doubt. He's got all sorts of Dr. Mindbender's got him on all sorts of meds. So anyway. All right, you got anything else, or are we at the Mike Schmidt trivia question?
I think we're at the Mike Schmidt trivia question.
Okay. All right. Are you ready? Do we have our music queued up for this?
And I'm not sure what the music is.
Okay. All right. I was thinking maybe something like, is this where we play Catch the Wind every episode?
Catch the wind until it blows. If I sing anymore, we owe $20,000. So I got to
say. Oh, yeah. Okay. That's true. Okay. So what was the mascot of Mike Schmidt's college?
Oh, man. I'm going to say the Bobcats.
Wow. That was strong. I'm impressed.
Was that it?
I really feel like it is. I wish I had a prize for you of some sort.
He was from Ohio.
Uh-huh.
And I was certain he didn't go to Ohio State.
Yep.
So it's going to be between Miami and Ohio University. So I went to Ohio University. So
Okay. Well, I'm just impressed you knew what Ohio University's mascot was.
Oh, yeah. Over there in Athens, Ohio.
Yeah. Yeah.
That actually seems like a cool place to actually go see a football game.
So as a prize, your prize for getting the question right today is there is a fold-out Murphy bed with your name on it ready whenever you're whenever you decide
that,
to get
That is some exciting news.
Yes, indeed. Indeed.
I'm also going to ask that there be a Castle Grayskull and maybe some He-Man figures set up in a entertaining positions, reenacting something from the show.
Yeah, okay, we'll work on that.
You have a Castle Grayskull, if I'm not mistaken. Do you?
So I have
it's
to.
It's a yes or no. It's
a no because what? So the toys they've collapsed. My kids, I let my kids play with them, and they had been in the attic for years, and they just there's nothing left of them anymore.
Oh, so I'm sorry.
It is. I mean, it's you know, it's the story of most kids' childhood toys. You know, I think you've got some similar stories to share in regard to lost toys.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
So, okay. Well, have we spent enough time in the Nexus for the evening?
I think we have. Let's see real quick if I can get you to, can you name for me the two main characters on Emergency? Go.
No, I can't name. I don't remember their names. John was one of them. John.
Let's see. Yes.
Okay. John was the taller one. The other one was it Matt?
Roy.
Okay.
I'm impressed you got John. I mean, I know it's the most common name in the Western Hemisphere, but
well, so. I felt like that was correct. I would not have gotten Roy, not in 1,000 years, but yeah.
So I'd like to remind our listeners turn in next week to our next episode of the Nexus of Pop Culture and Cherry Road, and where Scott shares his thoughts on the Prime Meridian.
And yes, why
it's a fraud and has deceived us all.
Yes. And I mean, this is going to be good information as you prepare yourself for what I don't know. But just be warned, you need to know about this conspiracy. So,
if I'm going to say this right now, if you're in Greenwich, England, and you're listening to this, you need to like listen in the basement next week. Shut the blinds. Don't let anyone know.
That's right.
Because it's going to change things.
That's right. It is. It's going to be revolutionary, which is what most instances where we come together in the Nexus become, revolutionary.
That's right.
So, anyway, well, sayonara, my friend.
Sayonara.
We'll talk soon.
Gentle to the Briss.
Indeed.
See you next week.
All right, bye.